Look, I'd like to begin by adding my thanks to the organisers of this meeting for inviting me. It's been a very stimulating experience to be here. Last night I was talking with Cliff Tabin. He reminded me that it was at the last ISDB symposium that he and I and Andy McMahon first got together to discuss our initial findings with the hedgehog homologs that our labs had just been cloning from vertebrates. And in the four years since that meeting, of course, hedgehog proteins have been implicated in many different processes in vertebrate development. And in the second part of my talk today, I'd like to tell you about one of those processes that we've been studying in my lab recently, which is the specification of muscle cell type in the developing zebrafish embryo. But before I do that, what I wanted to do was to, in the first part of the talk, give a brief resume and overview of what we've learned about hedgehog signaling using genetic analysis in Drosophila, because after all, it is through genetics in Drosophila that we first became aware of the hedgehog gene and the hedgehog gene family. So if I could have the first slide, please. I just push it, okay. So this first slide shows a cuticular preparation, which we haven't seen so many of at this meeting, of a wild-type first instar Drosophila larva, showing the familiar segmental pattern, which was used as a very nice phenotype to score in the saturation mutagenesis of Nussslein Wolfhard and Bieshaus. And on the right, you see a typical cuticular pattern of a member of the segment polarity class, which is one of the classes defined in this mutant screen. And this phenotype is fairly typical of the largest number of genes which fall within this class. And the segment polarity mutants are so called because, I hope it's clear from this, that you can see that the embryo forms the appropriate number of segments, but the polarity and the patterning within individual segments is disrupted. And principally, what's most obvious from this particular animal is that the posterior parts of each segment, which are indicated here in the wild type by this naked cuticle, which is devoid of these denticles, these protrusions on the ventral surface of the cuticle, the naked cuticle is actually replaced by these ventral denticles. So now cells in the posterior part of each segment are behaving as though they were in the anterior part. And there's also a reversal of polarity associated with these in most cases. Now, this particular animal is not mutant for hedgehog, I hasten to add. It's actually a mutation for one of the genes downstream of hedgehog, which I'm not going to be mentioning today, called Cubitus interruptus. But this phenotype is fairly typical of alleles of hedgehog and also of another secreted, a gene encoding another secreted protein. And of course, I take it as a given that you know that hedgehog encodes a secreted protein. This is typical of mutations in the wingless gene, which encodes another secreted protein, which we're going to be hearing more of in the next talk from Roel Nusser. So when both of these genes were cloned, it was possible to look at their expression patterns, and now I'm talking about hedgehog and wingless. And the interesting thing about them is that both of them are expressed in very restricted patterns within individual segments in the developing embryo. So on the left panel, you see a series of segments of an embryo at about 6 hours after fertilization, which have been stained to reveal expression domains of wingless in brown and hedgehog in blue. And the right panel obviously just shows the corresponding segments as they'll differentiate about 15 hours after this embryo was fixed as it continued to develop. So a model of how the wingless gene functions has been elaborated over several years based on the studies of many different labs. And it's summarized here, and this is actually a panel taken from a review by Mark Pfeiffer and Amy Bechevik a few years ago in TIGS. And essentially the idea of the way in which wingless works is that it's a secreted protein expressed in this cell. And then the protein is secreted and it diffuses across the segment. And different levels of wingless activity will elicit different cell fates across an individual segment. And this is reminiscent of the way in which wingless acts in a graded fashion, which we heard about in the beautiful talk from Steve Cohen earlier this week. So in the absence of wingless, what happens is, obviously, there's no protein made, there's no diffusion of the protein, and all of the cells adopt, essentially, a similar identity, which gives the segment polarity phenotype. So if wingless is itself capable of actually directing the patterning of an individual segment, the question then arose as to what hedgehog was doing. And the answer to that can be summarized in the results of some simple experiments which are just summarized here, basically they're gain of function and loss of function experiments. So the top panels show the normal pattern of wingless expression in an embryo, again about 6 hours after development. And this is an extended germ band, just to remind you that in Drosophila, the embryo folds back on itself during gastrulation. And you see the individual stripes of wingless delimiting the individual segments. And here's the normal pattern that they'll differentiate into. In the absence of hedgehog activity, this expression of wingless disappears, the transcription of wingless disappears. And that, therefore, is consistent with the fact that you see a phenotype very similar to the loss of wingless when you remove hedgehog activity. So the implication of this is that hedgehog is acting to signal to its neighboring cells to switch on wingless transcription. And notice that it only does that in the immediately adjacent cells. So this cell here, one cell over, does not express wingless. Wingless, incidentally, as well as signaling in this direction, signals back to maintain the expression of hedgehog. And that's an important point which I'll return to in a moment. So now we can do the reverse experiment and ask if hedgehog is acting locally to regulate wingless transcription, what happens if we express if we express hedgehog ubiquitously, so we deregulate its spatial expression, what's the consequence of that for wingless transcription? And the answer here is clear that now wingless is ectopically expressed as well. The ectopic activation of wingless is limited because it turns out that only half of the cells in each segment are transcriptionally competent to activate wingless, but all of those cells which are transcriptionally competent will switch on wingless. And that ectopic activation of wingless has various consequences, which I don't have time to go into, because it results in a new phenotype here. Again, what we could describe as a second polarity phenotype, because although it's different from this one, the positional specification within individual segments and the polarity has been disrupted through this ectopic expression of wingless. So by studying different members of the second polarity gene family, which have either this loss of function phenotype or this gain of function phenotype, it's been possible for us to deduce more or less the framework of the signal transduction pathway which is responsible for transducing hedgehog signal. And I haven't got time and I'm not going to go into all of that now, I just want to dwell for a few moments on the reception of the hedgehog signal. So first of all, if we look at a mutation which has a phenotype very similar to this, and this is shown in the next slide, and this is a mutation called patched, and you've already heard, many of you will have already heard about patched at this meeting. So this is the original phenotype shown by a patch mutant that's isolated in the screen. And you can see that the only thing to notice is this change in the shape of the denticles, which is very similar to that seen when you mis-express hedgehog. And in fact, if you look at the expression of wingless in these patch mutants, then you see exactly the same effect, a derepression of wingless transcription. So this is interesting. So here's a gene which, when we remove it, has the same effect as when the hedgehog signal is deregulated. And when we cloned the patch gene many years ago now, we found that it had this structure, which again has probably become quite familiar. And that was rather puzzling because we didn't really see how this multi-transmembrane protein could have this effect of repressing wingless transcription. But then an important finding was that if you remove patched activity from an embryo which already lacks hedgehog, you can suppress the hedgehog phenotype. And this, in fact, was first pointed out to me by Eric Dieschaus many years ago. And when he told me this, it took me about another year or so scratching my head. And then we realized that this then suggested a simple model, the way in which patch might actually function, which is that it would act as a receptor for hedgehog. But instead of acting to activate patch, hedgehog would act to repress patch. So the normal function of patch is actually to repress transcription of wingless, and it does that presumably by repressing the activity of other factors that required for this activation of wingless transcription. And now when hedgehog binds to patched, that would inactivate patched, allowing these activators to activate wingless, and you would see wingless transcription. So that was the simple model. Could you turn it off, please? Oh, sorry, can we have it back on for 1 second? So the other thing we would like to know is then the identity of some of these downstream factors. What are the factors which are required for the transcription of wingless in response to hedgehog? And obviously, from what I've told you, one way of finding those is by looking at these other members of the second polarity class which have a similar phenotype to wingless or hedgehog. And I'll just give one example of that, which is on the next slide, which is the smoothened gene. The smoothened was one of the second polarity genes which we went back to the collection and looked at. And it has a phenotype when the activity of the gene is completely eliminated, both from the embryo And from the mother, which lays the egg, which develops into the embryo, the phenotype is almost indistinguishable from that of hedgehog. But of course, just looking at the similarity phenotype is not enough to tell us that any particular gene is required for hedgehog signaling or wingless signaling, because there is this feedback loop which I described to you, whereby hedgehog regulates wingless, but wingless regulates hedgehog. So we can't, just by examining the phenotype, implicate a gene such as smoothened either as being either downstream of wingless or downstream of hedgehog. So to get around this, we use a trick of misexpressing either of these signals independently of the other gene, and then ask which signal actually requires the activity of smoothened for its activity. And the answer from this is clear. So here we're actually misexpressing wingless, in this case, under the control of a promoter which expresses it in every other segment. And you can see now that in the absence of smoothened, we can if the embryo expresses wingless, you can now rescue the phenotype in alternate segments. If you do the same experiment with hedgehog, misexpressing the hedgehog signal in alternate segments, there is absolutely no phenotypic effect. So that tells us that smoothened is required for hedgehog signaling, but not for wingless signaling, and therefore that hedgehog smoothened is downstream of hedgehog, but upstream of wingless. Now, doing double mutant analysis, we also found that smoothened is downstream of patch, because if we make a patched smoothened double mutant, unlike a patched hedgehog double mutant, we now see this phenotype. So the surprise was that when we cloned, and Joan Hooper and Marcus Null's lab also cloned smoothened, and discovered that it encodes a protein, another transmembrane protein, with seven transmembrane domains, which is actually a member of the Frizzled family, which you'll hear about in the next talk from Roel Mutter, which his lab has implicated in reception of wingless signaling. So at first sight, one would expect that this is the best candidate for the hedgehog receptor. But as I've told you, our genetic analysis places smoothened downstream of patched. And last year, work from Arman Rosenthal's group and also from Cliff Tatum's lab showed molecularly, finally, that hedgehog does indeed bind to patched, and Rosenthal's lab also showed that hedgehog does not bind to smoothened. So this model appears to be correct. So now we can test, when we're testing this, is to ask if the way in which the pathway is activated is by patched activity being inactivated, and that allows smoothened now to become active, independent of a ligand, then one way of activating the pathway would be to express smoothened at high levels, so that this inhibition by patch could be titrated out. And to do that, we move to the imaginal disk, which you also heard about earlier this week from Steve Curran. And here, hedgehog, again, has an important function. In this case, in the wing imaginal disk, it regulates the expression of another secreted protein, the TGF-beta family member, DPP, not wingless. So that's all that you need to know for the purpose of this experiment. It's just that we're now assaying a different gene for activity of hedgehog. So in such a disk, hedgehog expression is restricted to the posterior part, as shown in red here. Patch is expressed throughout the anterior part, and therefore is presumably inactivating smoothened, which is expressed ubiquitously. But here at the boundary, where cells are seeing hedgehog, the pathway is being activated, presumably because smoothened is being activated in response to the inactivation of patched. So the question now is can we activate this pathway by expressing high levels of smoothened over in this part of the disk, way away from the hedgehog signal, and that should happen if smoothened is essentially constitutively active when repression of by patch is titrated out. And to do this, we use the Gal4 UAS system, and which has already been explained, so I won't go through it again, but essentially what we did was use this system to drive very high level expression of smoothened in this region of the imaginal disk. Here's the wild type pattern of DPP, and now you see when smoothened is expressed at very high levels, that leads to the activation of DPP, many cell diameters away from cells expressing hedgehog, and therefore presumably independent of hedgehog activity. So the final thing I want to tell you from Drosophila is one final twist to the story, which is that in the absence of patched activity, what you see is, as you would expect, that DPP becomes misexpressed, because now there's no longer any patch to repress smoothened. But the other thing which happens is that patched itself becomes derepressed. So if you look at the normal expression of patched, it too is expressed at very high levels along the boundary with the hedgehog expressing cells. In other words, its transcription is upregulated in response to hedgehog signaling. And Gary Struhl very recently produced a very beautiful analysis which provided a clear rationalization of this, which is that when cells respond to hedgehog, they upregulate patched And Patch, because Patch binds Hedgehog, it sequesters Hedgehog and thereby limits the range of the signal. And this is just summarized in this schematic here. So his idea is that when cells are secreting Hedgehog, the response is to inactivate Patch, which activates Patch transcription, thus producing more Patch protein in the membrane, and that is able to sequester the Hedgehog protein, which is being secreted by neighboring cells, and prevents the diffusion beyond, in this case, beyond the neighboring cell. But of course, this could be modulated to allow more or less diffusion of Hedgehog, depending on the levels to which Patch is upregulated. So that's all I want to say about Drosophila, and I want to switch now for the rest of the talk to the zebrafish. And the next slide shows the patterns of expression of one of the hedgehog family genes, which can be cloned in zebrafish, called Sonic Hedgehog, the pattern of which is probably very familiar to you, showing its expression along the midline in these structures, in these prominent structures, the notochord and the floor plate. And about 2 years ago, Lisa Goodrich and Ron Johnson in Matt Scott's lab succeeded in cloning homologs of Patch from mouse and then from chick in collaboration with Cliff Tabin. And so we collaborated with them to clone Patch homologs from fish. And this panel shows the expression pattern of one of these Patch genes, which we isolated in this exercise. And it shows that as in Drosophila, Patch transcription is highest in cells adjacent or close to those cells expressing Hedgehog. So in this case, you see a cross-section here showing the expression of Hedgehog, Sonic Hedgehog, in the notochord in the floor plate. Here's a cross-section at a slightly more caudal level of the embryo showing the expression of Patch, which is absent from the notochord in the floor plate, but is at high levels in cells surrounding these two Hedgehog expressing structures. So if we look at a schematic diagram of the cross-section to the fish embryo, what we see here is the notochord, which is expressing Sonic Hedgehog, and you've already heard evidence that Hedgehog is signaling up to the neural tube, although precisely which structures it's inducing here is now seems to be a matter of debate, but I think it's agreed by everybody that Hedgehog signaling is responsible for inducing motor neurons, and so that corresponds to the fact that we see high-level expression of Patch in the ventral neural tube. But then the other tissue in which we see high level of Patch is in the surrounding somite, the flanking somite. And in the fish, most of the somite is going to develop into myotome. And we can distinguish three distinct cell fiber types in the myotome. The bulk of the myotome, shown here in light green, is going to give rise to fast-twitch fiber types. The cells at the periphery of the myotome differentiate into slow-twitch fiber types. And then the second class of slow-twitch fiber types remain here close to the notochord, and these are called the muscle pioneer cells. And work from Marnie Halpin and Chuck Kimmel a few years ago had already suggested that the induction of these cells, the muscle pioneer cells, was dependent upon signals which come from the notochord. And I'll come back to that point, the evidence of that, in a few moments. More recently, very elegant analysis from Steve Devoto in Monty Westerfield's lab showed that these slow twitch fiber type muscles here, and in future I'm just going to say slow and fast muscle, also arise initially close to the notochord and then migrate out to the periphery. So this led to the possibility that the induction of both of these slow muscle types could depend on signals from the notochord. And we've been looking at this in collaboration with Simon Hughes and Chris Blagden at King's College, who had identified some monoclonal antibodies which specifically recognize one or other fiber type. So to begin with, I'm just going to show you the patterns recognized by these antibodies. So here is a cross-section of an embryo at 24 hours of development, showing the pattern of these slow muscles as revealed by this slow-specific myosin heavy chain antibody. And here, at a similar stage, is the fast muscle, as revealed by an antibody specific for a fast myosin heavy chain isotype. And the merge of these two here, this is another antibody which recognizes all myosin. So here you can see the entire myotome labeled here with the slow muscles at the periphery. And here you see the slow and the fast in mutually exclusive sets of cells. So using these antibodies, we've been able to trace the origin of these cells and also look at the factors which regulate their expression, their induction, sorry. So the next slide just really recapitulates and extends slightly the work from Steve Devoto that I mentioned earlier. And this shows that initially, as he'd shown, that the first muscle cells to differentiate, as shown here by all myosin, so the only cells expressing myosin at this stage are actually those expressing the slow isoform. And if we look at slightly later stage embryo, now we look at the rostral to caudal sequence, where the younger somites are obviously at the positive, sorry, caudal to rostral sequence, where the younger somites are, developmentally younger somites at the posterior part of the embryo, then you can see what happens next is that these slow muscles start to migrate both dorsally and ventrally, and then they migrate outwards. And at this stage, there's still no expression of any FOS myosin, so there is still no differentiation of FOS muscle cells. And it's only after these cells, the slow muscles, have actually migrated through the myosome that the first FOS muscles start to differentiate. And by 24 hours, you see the familiar pattern I've already described to you, which is the expression of the slow on the outside and the FOS on the inside. So if we ask about the origin of these cells, it turns out that these cells which lie adjacent to the notochord are actually the first cells to express the myogenic factor, MyoD. So even already in the pre-Semitic mesoderm, MyoD is expressed at very high levels in the cells flanking the notochord, and this was originally shown by Eric Weinberg and his collaborators. And Jean-Paul Concorde in my lab, and also Eric Weinberg's lab, had already shown that the expression of this of MyoD could be induced by misexpressing sonic hedgehog. So if you look at the wild-type pattern, you could imagine that since these cells are adjacent to those expressing sonic, they might that activation might depend on sonic. And sure enough, if you now misexpress sonic by injecting sonic hedgehog message into the embryo, you see this widespread activation of MyoD throughout the paraxial mesoderm. And incidentally, this shows the similar activation of patched when sonic isn't expressed. So we wondered whether or not this precocious activation of MyoD was sufficient to switch the fate of cells here, which would normally give rise to FOS muscles, so that they became slow muscles. And so we just repeated these experiments and then assayed the expression of these different myosin isoforms with the antibodies I've described to you. And you can see here in the extreme case that this misexpression of sonic totally wipes out all FOS muscle. So these are now embryos at 24 hours, and all of the internal myotome should be FOS, and only the periphery should be slow. Now you see there is no FOS muscle here, and all of the myotome is developing into the slow type. Here's a slightly weaker example where one half of the embryo is developed normally, and the other half has become a sort of patchwork of slow and FOS muscle. So one possibility is that simply by precocious activation of MyoD, these cells then become primed to respond to a signal subsequently, which will tell them to become slow. The other possibility is sonic is actually directly telling cells to become slow. And to try and distinguish between these, we set up an in vitro culture system where we can take blastoderm embryos, dissociate them, culture them on laminin, and then look at their differentiation. It turns out that when you do this, most of the cells will differentiate into muscle, and most of them differentiate into fast muscle. And this just shows examples of some of these cultured cells here. So now we have a system where we can actually ask whether we can influence the way in which the cell differentiates by adding back factors. And when we add purified recombinant sonic hedgehog to these cultures, we can essentially switch the fate of all of the cells from being fast to being slow. So this suggests that sonic itself is actually specifying slow muscle fate. So clearly what we would really like to have is mutants which affect sonic hedgehog signaling, which would allow us to test this hypothesis. So we've shown that ectopic sonic will switch muscle fate, but is sonic actually required during development? And as you heard from Christian Nussler and Volhard's talk earlier in the week, they've undertaken a massive mutagenesis screen of the zebrafish genome, and amongst the mutants they found are a class which affects midline signaling. So Kate Lewis, a student in my lab, went to Tübingen and screened some of these defective midline mutants to look at the expression of patch as a way of trying to identify mutants amongst these which are directly involved in the hedgehog pathway. So remember, patch is the very earliest response of cells to hedgehog signaling. And I'm just going to give you two examples, both of which are a slight surprise. So the first mutant she looked at the first mutant I'll tell you about is a mutation called iguana, which had been identified as having defective midline, so it looked like a partial loss of midline signaling. And surprisingly, when she looked at patched expression in this, she actually found the opposite to what we would have predicted. So here's the wild-type expression of patched, and in the iguana mutant, patched is expressed ectopically. So it extends both dorsal ventrally in the somite, and it also extends medialaterally, which you can't see in this preparation. So this is the phenotype which one would predict if the hedgehog pathway was now deregulated. In fact, it's sort of like a weak patch mutation in Drosophila. So if our model is correct, that hedgehog signaling, that activation of the hedgehog pathway specifies cells to become slow muscle, we'd expect now that in these mutants, all of the myotone would become slow muscle type. So we looked for the antibodies, and as you see in the middle panel, all of the muscles, all of the myotone now expresses the slow isoform. Intriguingly, all of the cells also express the fast isoform. So in fact, these cells now have a dual specification that they appear to be both slow and fast, which is a situation which we haven't seen during normal embryogenesis. The second example I want to show you is what is a mutation, which again you've probably already heard about, is the sonic mu mutation, which has been shown by Pascal Hafter. And I should say that all of this work's been done in collaboration with Pascal Hafter's group. So Pascal has shown that sonic mu is a mutation in sonic hedgehog itself, and Kate showed that, as expected, now in the absence of sonic hedgehog expression, all of the expression of patched in the mesoderm, in the somites, is absent. So now we would expect, from what I've told you, is that in this mutant we shouldn't expect to see any slow muscle form. In fact, that's not the case. There is a reduction in the differentiation of slow muscle, but there are still some muscles which are clearly the slow type, which have behaved normally as well if they've been induced and they've migrated out to their appropriate location. So one possible explanation for this could be that there is some overlapping functional and functional redundancy. And one reason for thinking that is that in zebrafish, as in other vertebrates, there are multiple hedgehog genes, but in zebrafish, unlike higher vertebrates, amniotes and tetrapods generally, these genes are expressed in overlapping domains. So two of the genes are shown here, echidna hedgehog, which was shown in my lab, and piggywinkle, which was characterized by Steve Eck in Silvici's lab, are expressed, as you can see, in subsets of the domain of sonic hedgehog. So whereas sonic is expressed both in the notochord and the floor plate, piggywinkle is restricted to the floor plate and the ventral brain, whereas echidna's expression is restricted exclusively to the notochord. So we know that in the absence of sonic hedgehog, so in the sonic U mutant, both of these genes are expressed normally. So it's quite conceivable that either of these genes could substitute for sonic in the absence of sonic activity and at least partially induce some slow muscle. But we don't actually believe that the only thing that echidna hedgehog is doing is acting as some sort of fallback in case sonic doesn't work properly. We actually believe that echidna has a specific function of its own. In the last couple of moments, I just want to explain this to you and come back to the second population of slow muscles, which I've described to you at the beginning of this section of the talk, the muscle pioneer cells. So as I said, Marnie Helfen in 1993, when she described the no-tail mutant, showed that one of the characteristics of no-tail is that they lack muscle pioneer cells. And that was what initially led to the idea that the notochord is required for induction in muscle pioneer cells. The puzzling thing, from what I've told you now, though, is that sonic hedgehog is expressed at very high levels along the midline of notal mutants, and yet there is no induction of these muscle pioneer cells. So that suggests that sonic alone is not sufficient to induce the muscle pioneer fate. We know that this sonic is functional in inducing slow muscles generally, or the other type of slow muscles, because if you look at slow muscle differentiation in a notal mutant, you can see that it's pretty normal. It tails off towards the end, but that's where the notochord is totally absent. That the expression of sonic is totally absent in the developing tail of the embryo. But in the trunk region, then there is pretty good induction of slow muscles. So the key observation then for us is that in the absence of notal, whereas there is normal sonic expression or high-level sonic expression in the midline, there is no expression of echidna hedgehog in the notochord in the cells which the midline, which of course the notal mutant lacks the notochord. So perhaps this isn't so surprising. So we wondered then whether or not echidna was specifically required for the induction of these muscle pioneers. And to test that, we injected echidna hedgehog into notal mutants, and under our conditions, we found that echidna hedgehog was sufficient to rescue the differentiation of muscle pioneers, this second type of slow muscle in a nodal mutant, and under the same conditions, tonic was not sufficient to do that. So our understanding of this process of muscle specification then is summarized here. We believe that tonic is responsible for specifying the first type of slow muscle cells, or in fact perhaps a subpopulation of all cells which are going to differentiate into slow muscle. But then a subpopulation of those becomes singled out to become muscle pioneers, and that depends on an inductive influence of echidna hedgehog. Now, it doesn't necessarily follow, but it does suggest from what I've told you that there might be different receptors for the different hedgehogs. And as I mentioned at the outset of this section, we initially identified two patch genes expressed at high levels close to the ventral floor of the brain, for instance, but its expression extends more dorsally in the neural tube, and it's also slightly more diffuse in the somites. But the interesting observation which you can see from this panel is that in the absence of sonic hedgehog, then there is absolutely, as far as we can see, no effect on patch 2 expression. So this is all circumstantial, but it's tempting to think that perhaps patch 2 could be acting specifically as a receptor for echidna hedgehog. And up until yesterday, we thought that this was a sort of curiosity of the zebrafish, because of course it's well known that the zebra, well, it's becoming very clear now that the zebrafish or teleost genomes in general have undergone an extra duplication. And in fact, echidna is one of two homologs of the amniote Indian hedgehog, and tiggywinkle is one of two homologs of the amniote sonic hedgehog. So we just assumed that this extra patch gene was a consequence of that genome duplication. So I was very interested to see a poster yesterday, which is B15 from Takabatataki and Takashima, in which they've cloned an additional patch gene from mouse, which has a sequence similarity very similar to that of zebrafish patch 1. So I think that it's still early days to think that all hedgehogs are signaling through the same receptor. And it may well be that this proliferation of hedgehogs in vertebrates is indicative of different signaling potentials. And finally, I'd like to end by acknowledging, I bring this from an American audience, because people in America often don't know what a hedgehog looks like. This is a hedgehog, and this shows that interest in hedgehogs is a simple dominant Mendelian trait. So the first part of the talk, I reviewed a lot of work on Drosophila, some of which had come from my lab, and obviously a lot of it from other labs, and that work's been done over many years, and I couldn't acknowledge all the people, but particularly the recent work had been done on Smooth and was done by Marcel van den Heuvel. All of the work on the zebrafish, which I've described to you, has been done by postdoc Pete Curry, graduate student Kate Lewis, and the research assistant Wendy Norris. And as I said, we've done this in collaboration with Chris Blagden and Simon Hughes at King's College in London, and Pascal Hafter, Heike Schotte, and Freek van Eden in Tübingen. Thank you.